banking bonuses, hotel recategorizations, and a Chase shutdown story on today's Milanomics Squared podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Simon.
And I'm Robert Dwyer.
And this is the Milanomics Squared podcast, no annual fee edition.
If you're not subscribed to the full Milanomics podcast, you're missing out on a deeper dive into the following topics like this. News item number one, a $600 Citizens Bank checking bonus that has a $2,000 singular direct deposit requirement. I happened to sign up for this just this morning. It kind of malfunctioned on me. I went to submit the application and they wanted my driver's license and some other documentation, so I wasn't able to fully establish the account. But
this was in person or online, Robert?
Online. So, okay. Yeah, you know, they started asking me all kinds of questions about, you know, the color of my car and things like that. And
Who are you? Yeah.
But it made my, you're able to fund it with $1,000. With a credit card online, but that didn't go through because the authorization didn't go through. So I hope I can patch it up, but even so, it's not a big deal if, you know, $1,000 of spend goes down the drain, but $600 for a checking account bonus that doesn't really have any requirement other than this single large direct deposit that they want to see is pretty good deal. This is kind of in the upper Midwest, Northeast part of the country, Citizens Bank. So if you're in the area and eligible, give it a look.
Nice. All right. Well, we've got another one right here, another bank bonus right here, and that's the combined $300 checking, $200 savings for a total of $500 at Bank of America. This is targeted, although I was targeted for it just on my credit card when I logged out, and so it seems pretty widely targeted. So if you don't have a Bank of America checking account, this is a good bonus. This is as good a bonus as I can recall. There is a $4,000 direct deposit requirement in 90 days. And there are some ways to waive the fees on the account. The savings account bonus is probably not worth doing. It's $200, but you need to bring $20,000 in new funds and you need to leave it there for quite some time. The consideration there being that you're missing out on the interest that you would be earning on that $20,000 somewhere else, because the interest is very, very low on that account. But the checking account, definitely worth looking into. Any more, Robert? Got any more checking account bonuses here on this checking account bonus laden episode?
We have one more, and that is from Wells Fargo. They've got a $400 checking bonus, and it requires $3,000 in combined monthly direct deposits. You're eligible for this if you haven't gotten a Wells Fargo banking bonus in the last 12 months. And you can get this nationwide. I'm able to open it even though I'm not in the Wells Fargo service area. Closing Wells Fargo checking accounts, on the other hand, when you're not in their service area, can be quite a bit more difficult. And I'm speaking from personal experience there. That said, I think this pairs well with the Business Platinum card we've been talking about on the site lately. And that is a 50,000 point bonus for that Business Platinum credit card. But in order to get that card, you need to have an established relationship with Wells Fargo. They want to see a checking account that's been open for 12 months in order to open that business credit card. So get to know Wells Fargo. And I think a good way to start is with this $400 checking account bonus.
So we'll go ahead and we'll move on here and we'll talk about some hotel recategorizations. The reason that we want to go over them is that the recategorizations are happening shortly here, but the effect does not affect currently booked hotels at the current rates. And so we have a Hyatt one and a Marriott one. I guess I'll take the Hyatt one. Robert, you want to go over the Marriott one?
Okay.
Well, we talked a lot about these Hyatt changes last week on the show, but it's just a reminder that these changes go into effect on March 18th. So if you do have an opportunity to look forward in your demand schedule for travel in the upcoming year, and you have a place that aligns, or you have a need that aligns with one of these hotels that's recategorizing, just go ahead and book it. Even book it speculatively, maybe, because once March 18th happens, those prices go up and it's going to cost you a little bit more to stay in that hotel. So the basic thing that we're going over here is the idea of locking in at the current rate before they go up. So with Hyatt, you know, that's not a huge jump. We talked last week, most of these categories are going up 5,000 points, but Robert, anything that you have taken advantage of before the rates go up here?
Yeah, I booked that Hyatt Coconut Point. Nice. That one's going from 15,000 to 20,000. And like you say, that's not that big of a jump, but Hyatt Now allows you to book a premium suite straight away, a guaranteed suite, you know, even if it's like peak time, if it's available. And it was. So I booked a premium suite there for 30,000 points a night. So I'm paying twice as much as the normal old price for it, 15,000, but that's quite a bit. That's 10,000 points less than it will be after it gets recategorized to 20,000.
Right.
So that room goes for $859 a night when I booked it around the November timeframe. I've stayed there before and had a good time, and I'm looking to replicate that stay. So yeah, just an example of something to take a look at. I was thinking, yeah, these changes aren't that big. What's the big deal? But that's a pretty big savings over a couple nights, couple rooms, especially. So yeah, give it a look and see if you can find some value out there before things disappear. You mentioned Marriott is changing as well. Their date is March 5th. So that's coming up here pretty soon as well. Their high-end hotels now are capped at 60,000 a night, which is something that, you know, we thought was incredible when SPG and Marriott were merging and they're going through this transition. Like, oh, can you imagine being able to book any SPG luxury property for 60,000? They're not going to be, this is unsustainable. But I don't know. Have you booked any of those hotels at all at 60,000?
I'm not. I was just going to mention, yeah, it's like this program doesn't exist to me. It really is. It's like a blank spot in my head, at least. So, I know that it's a big deal that these are finally being recategorized. I guess they didn't have the right categories, right? They couldn't go high enough.
Is yeah, that the issue? I guess that, you know, they're going to introduce peak and off peak in addition to making things go from 60 all the way up to 100,000. So it's getting more complex. There's a higher high end. Along with this, their Bonvoy cards, you know, are bringing back the ability to earn effectively 3 Marriott points per dollar for some people, you know, so they're kind of getting back to their old earning rate on the credit card side, which is good news. But along with this, they're slipping out the quality of the award chart. So for a moment there, I was lulled into thinking that SPG days were back, you know, 3x earning and low value redemptions, but the low value redemptions aren't going to stay around for much longer, and the ability to earn 3x doesn't last forever, and it's not for everybody. So yeah, some shades of the old SPG glory days, but overall Marriott is not my favorite program, and it's almost my least favorite program.
Yeah, and that says a lot. I mean, we were just talking about where would we even speculatively book, because it has to be something we can get to. It has to be something that we realistically can use, and they're just not, like I said, they're just not on my radar. I would rattle off a few Hyatt properties or a few Hilton properties before I'd even consider a Marriott. And you know I don't want to set foot in a Hilton. So that says a lot about Marriott, right?
Yeah. That has been well established at this point.
All right. Well, that kind of concludes the news here. I think I really like this topic that we're going to go over today. I don't like it, but I think it's an important topic that we could go over here.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, we talked about the Chase Southwest Companion Pass promotion that Chase was running about a month ago. It seemed to hit peak hysteria. You know, the deal is you get one Chase Southwest personal credit card. And if you do get that, you get their companion pass for the rest of 2019. So for somebody who's kind of just getting into this and looking for a single simple deal, we said it might be a good deal for them if they were in a Southwest hub and they had a lot of opportunities to use this in the upcoming year. We said that, right, ironically and unfortunately, the people who would probably be best served by this are people who were not listening to the podcast. Well, I took care of that because a friend of mine was saying, oh, you have a travel podcast? I'm like, yeah, you should listen to it. And I said, listen to this episode, because the point of conversation at dinner among some friends was specifically the Southwest Companion Pass. I had one friend who was a hardcore points and miles guy, another friend who was a Companion Pass advocate, and then this other friend who was kind of, you know, somewhere in between, kind of curious about earning more points and miles and looking for something simple and easy to get started with.
Companion Pass curious, we'll call it.
Yes. Yes. I think that'd be a good thing. And points and miles curious, right? Like, you know, how do you get into this? How do you, you know, earn a bunch of points and miles without flying? I'm interested in this. So it seemed like a very good way for her to get started. And so she did. She applied for and was approved for the Chase Southwest personal card with an $8,000 limit. So the minimum spending requirement on this card is $4,000. And to get there, she charged $2,000 or so on an Airbnb, and then another $1,000 in cruise incidentals. So she's about $3,000 into the $4,000 minimum spend. And she wanted to get to 4,000 quickly so she could book companion pass airfare for these trips. And so she bought a $500 gift card at a grocery store. And that triggered a fraud alert. And the fraud alert, she cleared it. You know, they texted or called or whatever, and she cleared it. And then she waited a few days, and then she bought another $500 gift card at a grocery store. Same thing. Got a fraud alert, cleared it, waited a couple days. Thought everything was okay, but then a couple days later, she was the card was no longer authorizing purchases.
First Chase card she's ever had.
Yes, she has a Chase checking account, but this was her first Chase credit card.
Wow.
So I asked her a little bit more about what happened between when she got that first personal card and when the transaction stopped authorizing, and she revealed a couple more details. She took out a car loan a couple weeks after the initial Southwest personal card. And additionally, right around that time frame, she applied for a Chase Southwest business card. And the idea there being to have more Southwest points to use in conjunction with that companion pass.
Sure.
Now that application went pending. And that was right around the time when the Southwest personal card stopped authorizing transactions. So there seemed to be a link there between the application for the business card and the personal card stopping authorization of new transactions. So she called and checked with Southwest or with Chase and says, what's going on? She was told, the department that handles this stuff is only open on weekdays. So that's kind of a grim reminder.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's a bad sign. Yeah.
And when she checked her available balance online, it said it had a zero balance.
That's another bad sign.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've talked in the past about, not being terrified if you can't log into your bank's online account, because that could just mean a little bit of an IT glitch. But in this case, you're getting confirmation that you have zero available balance is a bad sign. Further, she got a notice from automated credit reporting service that her Southwest personal card had been closed. That came in over the weekend.
I like that the credit monitoring service works on the weekend, but Chase doesn't, right?
Yeah, exactly. So she called Chase on Monday and they said, yeah, we've closed the account because of too many inquiries and balances too high. Those were the reasons.
Wow.
That they gave her. Yeah. So she goes on to reveal that her credit score is in the mid 600s, which is it's not terribly high. The credit score, scale goes up to 850, I think, right? That's what we kind of consider
the
pinnacle. She was in the mid 600s. Prior to this, she'd had just a few credit cards, and her highest credit limit was around $5,000. And it wasn't that she was necessarily carrying a balance on some of those other credit cards, but she charged up a decent percentage of that and was in the process of paying it off. Like, for example, a card with a $5,000 limit, she maybe charged $3,000 or $4,000 on it, and the statement closed and had that balance on, and she was going to pay it off, but she wasn't carrying a balance on it necessarily. So what happened here? What can we learn from this? And what would we do differently if we could turn back time? What do you think?
Oof, I guess we should stop recommending our friends apply for Chase credit cards, right? Because I had a similar...
You've got a lot of bad stories about
that. I have a bad story about it as well. So we'll get into it later, I'm sure. But I mean, that's obviously a joke. What can we do? We're playing Chase's game here. So, they're the one that sets the rules. It's unfortunate. It's awful, actually, that that's how it went down. What did you tell your friend, Robert? What did you say?
Well, I mostly was just sussing out all these details that I just reiterated. It's stunning to me that they would actually close an account like this so early into a relationship. The opening of the business account caused there to be eyes on the account, it seems to me, the personal account. But I'm surprised that when a human looked at this, they said, the right thing to do here is close the personal account.
Yeah. I mean, you're buying Airbnb and, legitimate travel and one $500 card at a grocery store. But that's not even it. You're saying it had to do with applying for maybe the loan and then the business card and that too many cards in kind of a too short time? Or?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think a lot of us, when we first get into this game, we followed a very similar pattern. So it seems like we're dealing with a different Chase than we did back when we established our
totally,
you know, relationship totally, with yeah. them. You know, we always tell people to go slow, but that's ambiguous, right? You know, like, what do you mean by that? One card a year? One $500 gift card every, you know, I don't know that the gift cards had anything to do with it. There's nothing illegitimate about buying a true gift card at a grocery store to give someone for a gift. Or right. in terms of, you know, time shifting your expenses, right? Maybe you did buy a $500 Visa gift card yourself to maybe pay some bills later in a couple months because you wanted the companion pass pronto. I mean,
if buying gift cards is what gets Chase to shut you down, everyone that listens to this show should be shut down, right? I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense that that would be it. So, right, we've got to look at something else. But then, like you said, it seems like this is just the opposite of the bank we deal with, because it just, by just extension of these rules, you and I and our everybody that's in our circle should be shut down by Chase. If they really only want a certain type of customer, that's not us. And that's not, if that's not your friend, then that's definitely not us.
Well, what do we make of the credit score in the mid-600s? And what can we do to improve that? I mean, because so maybe there's a temporary setback here with Chase. From what I've heard, you can get back in Chase's good graces after some period of time. This isn't a lifetime ban.
Right. I've heard that as well.
And I think, you know, irrespective of whether Chase exists anymore, we can help people with scores in the mid-600s improve that. If I had to guess at what attribute of the my friend's credit portfolio is that was causing her score to drag down, it was that the percentage of her overall credit line was appeared to be highly utilized. Like, if you don't play the credit card game much, you don't have a lot of credit cards. And if your limits are fairly low and you're charging reasonable amount of personal expenses on them each month and letting the statement close with those balances on there, you appear to be kind of in a distressful situation to banks, right? I mean, say she had two cards that each had a $5,000 limit, and each of those cards had $3,000 or $4,000 on them when the statement closed. I bet she could have improved her credit score quite a bit by paying down the balance before the statement closed each month. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a 50 to 100 point credit score improvement just by doing that. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that you can improve your credit score, or even that it's possible to pay your credit card before the statement closes and they've, you know, technically sent you a bill.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, I think that's a very valid way that she could have gotten her score up. There's also a whole group of people that would say paying your bill mid-cycle could get you shut down. So, you know, we cannot know specifically what's going on here, but there is kind of a paradox. There's a type of paradox here where extremely creditworthy people who don't extend themselves or overextend themselves with credit are actually not able to get the credit that they really should be able to tap into because they maybe are a little bit credit averse. And so I would say, I hate to say the solution is more credit cards, but I think the solution is to not be scared of credit cards. I'm not saying that your friend is scared of credit cards, but I do know people who say, well, I only have one credit card and that's all I need because I don't need to carry a balance and I don't need more than one credit card. And I don't, you know, I don't want to have all that credit available. And if it's that you don't trust yourself to not, you know, go out and go nuts, that's fine. But if it's really not that, and you do have the ability to pace yourself, you're going to hurt yourself by not having more credit because of utilization or because of maybe like the total amount of lines that you have open just being very, very small. You have a thin portfolio of credit. Mm-hmm. You go to apply for something, they look at you and they go, well, sorry, can't approve you. The computer tells me no. And I've seen people get super upset and, you know, very well off people, they get upset because they say, what do you mean the computer says no? Yeah, you know, it's like, well, the computer says no. And that's it. We are a score. That's it. They've put a number to us and that's, with the exception of City National Bank, I don't know another bank that will approve you outside of that score or the computer's decision, basically.
Well, what would you recommend for someone with this kind of portfolio, this kind of profile? It seems like not a lot of cards, had trouble getting in Chase's good graces. It sounded like Chase approved her with a pretty healthy credit limit compared to her previous card. So she was on her way to, I think, down a better path. You know, what would we do differently if we could turn back time? I think going for that business card so shortly after going for the personal card.
Sure.
That was a mistake. And
at least secure the companion pass, because once that's in your account, that's yours. It has nothing to do with Chase.
I think so. And actually, that's a little, maybe a footnote to the story. She said she was able to get the, and hopefully, as far as I've heard lately, retain the companion pass. She did get it very quickly.
Okay.
So they didn't interfere with that. So, you know, she has one last hurrah to enjoy that this year. But the unfortunate thing is it's going to be hard for her to gin up Southwest points because she can't establish a relationship with Chase. You know, where mine was going was to earn some ultimate rewards or other ultimate rewards cards instead of another Southwest card, maybe a personal card or something like that in a player two mode or something like that.
That's blocked off to her too, right?
It's all blocked off.
Well, what about player two? Does she have a player two?
She does. Yeah. I don't know if you wanted to involve him at this point or not, but I think, yeah, if in general, you know, we were given this for general advice, which is, you know, why we're talking about it. Yeah, definitely get player two spun up and maybe get them a personal card because ultimate rewards can be transferred to people in the same household without incident. So you'd be able to generate those Southwest points or remain more flexible going forward. So yeah, definitely player two would be in general, sure. I think advice we should give.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, we should definitely link to that prior episode about Chase shutdowns as well. I mean, there's just so much about it, but it's funny too, because it's not funny, but you know, one of the interesting things is that people seem to be holding out for Chase. You know, I don't want to apply for anything because I want to get a Chase card. Are you really sure you want to deal with them? You know, I mean, are you sure this is the situation you want to get into? And then there's all of the opportunity cost. I mean, we've talked on, especially on the paid show, of some fantastic offers on credit cards that are not from Chase. So you're passing all of that up to throw your hat in the ring with Chase, and really, which Chase are you dealing with? So I would say, if you're not already fully invested in the Chase ecosystem, you need to really go slow. You need to go one card and secure your bonus and season that account and then move forward, because yeah, it seems like they are just trigger happy on these shutdowns.
The previous story we talked about with my friend getting so upset about not being able to get an additional Chase card and then putting them all through the shredder, that was a high credit score situation and frustration there. Here we have a more, you know, mid 600s credit score and a different type of frustration, and in fact, a shutdown. So from reading this as a data point, I think you have to go especially slow if you have a credit score that isn't, you know, over 750, over 800 or something like that, because it seems to me that they're you know, scrutinizing things more than they ever have with a credit score like that. But at the same time, I think that we've heard a lot of data points about applying for Chase business cards creating a lot of scrutiny on the account. So like, for example, I think that at some point in the last couple of months, the Marriott business card was said to not be under 524. So you might think, oh, it's time to rush in and get another Chase card that I didn't think I could get because of 524. But you need to be careful if that's going to lay eyes on your account. You don't like your overall, your relationship with Chase and with other banks, the frequency with which you've been applying. So it seems like you want to do everything you can to avoid a human from scrutinizing, because they just can drop the hammer anytime they want to.
This is going to sound crazy, Robert. What if you also take the attitude of nothing you can do is right, so just do whatever's best for you?
So flesh that out a little bit. What does that mean for this friend? What does this mean for you know, some seasoned veteran in the game?
That, you know, she didn't do anything wrong. She could just do what she would normally and rationally do. And if Chase does what they do, they were going to do it no matter what you would.
Would they have done it if she didn't open the business card?
I don't know. Maybe.
Right. Maybe they were like, oh, look at this $500 gift card purchase at a grocery store. You're an animal. You're a bust out risk.
Yeah. Maybe the frontline rep who cleared the fraud alert flagged it, or who knows, you know,
true.
Or maybe there was some other thing that was coming down the pike anyway. But
yeah,
you know, there is a valid argument to be made of, you know, like I'm saying, don't live your life on the assumption that you can tightrope walk the way Chase wants you to tightrope walk, because we don't know what that even looks like.
Well, so what do we recommend? What do we recommend in here? I mean, because I think there's other great banks out there. We've talked a lot about
Hilton Aspire card, maybe? Yeah, no.
Should jump to that for everything. It's your one-size-fits-all solution. No, I really do want to write a post and speak to people about Amex and the membership rewards program, because I don't think they're as straightforward as Chase, but with just a little bit of of familiarity, I think you can extract a lot of generic value out of the membership rewards program. I think Amex is more generous on approvals.
Way more generous, yeah.
We haven't had a lot of reader discussions about shutdowns with Amex, thankfully. So I think that's probably the bank I would look to next. I'd have to think about how to, you know, when we talked about the companion pass in general, we talked about whether it was right for everybody. I'm like, I would rather have just more generic, flexible travel because I don't want to be tied into Southwest.
That's a great point. The business card really doesn't make a lot of sense for me because it's not the best way to earn Southwest points. You know, if she had been trying to gin up the 110,000 she needed for a companion pass, I could understand that with the, you know, sign-up bonus.
Yeah.
But especially on the business side, she could have flanked over to a Inc. Preferred. The sign-up bonus is bigger.
Absolutely.
The earning is better. And mm-hmm. they're just as flexible and transferable to Southwest. Now, did she know that? Maybe not. Chase doesn't really outline that very well. Yeah.
So, no, I don't think so.
It's unfortunate. It really is.
All right. Well,
on that note,
on that happy note, where do we go from here?
Well, you know, I had shared on that episode when we talked about this product that I recommended it to a few people. No one can get approved. None of them. I think it was a similar situation. they had a too many applications or too many previous applications, and maybe that's actually did them a maybe them not getting approved was actually good. It saved me from some awkward conversations because. Yeah, you know, I'm getting very hesitant to recommend Chase credit cards to people I know personally because then I become the representative of, you know, Chase Bank and I don't have any skin in that game. And then I'm the one that they're going to come back to. I mean, how did you handle that when she came back to you?
Well, you're not kidding. I'm glad I didn't use a referral link or something like this, right? I just said, hey, here's the show. This is what we talked about. We think it's not right for almost anyone out there. I still don't think it was probably the best play, right? Because you know, the whole silly companion pass is such an effective marketing tool, but right. It bamboozles you into thinking this illusion of you know, free tickets, and it's not free tickets, it's half price tickets, and it's...
Or less if you have a family of three or four, you know, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, now, I would really encourage people to go to simpler things before the darkening around with the companion pass, and to me, that means things like where you just charge stuff and then erase it, like the Capital One Venture or the Barclays Arrival Plus. And then from there, get into more straightforward bank points, ultimate rewards, membership rewards, and thank you points. Take the travel you want to take. Don't be beholden to any one airfare or some other gimmick where you have to fly with a companion and an even number of people on certain, you know, airline and things like that. So that's where I think I would go with it longer term if I was, you know, providing advice and we were able to turn back time.
I like it, Robert. I wish we could talk more about it, but we've got to go. So, Robert, you want to close us out?
Thanks for joining us this week. For a more in-depth talk about miles and points, visit us at patreon.com/milenomics. There, you'll get a special link to listen to additional content right in your mobile podcast app or on your computer, where we speak more freely about the topics we discussed today.
And as always, you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Milenomics and Robert is at Robert Dwyer. We'd love to hear from you. Until then, we'll see you on the site.